and talk about ways to help each and every one of us out there. Chronically hurtful people. This is interesting. Our very special guest is Roxanne K. Livingston. She has a master's degree and has written this phenomenal book, Chronically Hurtful People, How to Identify and Deal with the Difficult, Destructive, and the Disconnected. Most everyone behaves in a hurtful manner at one time or another. Some people, however, behave hurtfully as a matter of course. These people, the chronically hurtful, have no interest in the negative impact their behavior has on others, no matter how seasoned one may be in one's professional work or how practiced at dealing with difficult behavior in one's personal life. Encounters with chronically hurtful people can be very challenging. Roxanne K. Livingston is a licensed professional counselor practicing individual, group, couple, and family therapy since 1973. She conducts workshops, that is, on a variety of mental health-related subjects, including dealing with chronically hurtful people. Interestingly enough, as we welcome you, Roxanne, you and I met at the airport on the same flight, flying to Denver, Colorado, and I'm honored to have you here talking about something that we all need help with.
Thank you very much.
Talk a little bit about your background and how we come to this particular subject, which I think we can all learn a lot from.
Well, I'm a psychotherapist, and I had been working with people, of course, in my office, but also doing training for public-serving groups such as police departments, mental health departments, health departments, child protective services, foster care, the whole gamut of people that work with the public. And what people were finding over and over is they often spent 75% of their energy dealing with 10% of the clientele.
Yes.
And the people that were least likely to actually benefit from the help that they had to offer. So I began developing trainings for these agencies about how to deal with these people. And over the course of 30 years of training, people frequently said to me at the trainings, please, please write a book about this. It's so valuable. And also I noticed that participants at these workshops would say, oh, my gosh, this doesn't just apply to mm-hmm. people in my professional work, my agency work, but people I live with. And so people were finding that they were getting helpful information about their personal life. So when I wrote the book, I wrote it with – it isn't filled with psychological jargon. It's written in language that would apply to anybody in any situation that's coming across – or that works with, deals with, lives with – people that are chronically hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that, when I say chronically hurtful, I'm talking about people basically that are not interested in the negative consequences that their behavior has for others.
And we see a lot of that out in the public,
yes,
and in the workplace, mm-hmm. and even what? In the home environment.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm.
So this is what? And let me go back in time here, because you're the expert on this topic. Way back in, let's say, the 1800s, I'm sure these problems were there, and go back in time, they were there.
Right.
But is it correct, and I'm asking you this, what makes this to be more of a preponderance of a problem today? Is it just that there are more people on the earth, and we're in tighter spaces, and working in more in social groups? How would you define it, if it is on the increase?
Well, you know, people say it is, and there's speculation about that the more societies become fragmented, the less that there is social support in communities, and people are, and stressed and pressured and whatever, that you get more and more acting out, more and more antisocial behavior, more and more behavior that, antisocial we often think of as criminal behavior, but I use it in a broad definition that just people that are not interested in how they affect other people. And I think this does seem to happen less in communities where there's lots of social support.
Yes, it's very interesting. In your book, as you know, you dedicate the book to Jack Rogers, a medical doctor. Describe mm-hmm. the influence he's had on you, and of course, I'm sure, a great inspiration for you.
He was a psychiatrist who was a consultant to mental health programs when I was first a social worker back in North Carolina years ago. And I was trained to work with adolescents, but I was having a really difficult time with a certain proportion of my caseload. And they were the ones that I'd worked the hardest with. And one time I came into a staffing, and I was running through the cases, and I was saying, oh, I don't know what's happened with Bobby. He was doing so well, and now he's out using heroin again, and I just heard Janie got arrested. And Dr. Rogers stopped me, and he said, Roxanne, you better learn really quickly. Antisocials live a lot longer than social workers.
Oh, wow.
And that really stuck with me.
That's a powerful statement.
Yes, because what I began to learn is that is that there are people who, no matter what we try, they, if that person isn't interested in making changes, we can end up spinning our wheels. And so people have to learn how to take care of themselves when they're dealing with people that are very difficult.
Oh, no, that's amazing. I mean, emotional pain. I think everybody gets what that is. But in today's world, I mean, give us a couple of examples here. I mean, you could be in the school and the bully comes to a child and starts that bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Then you could be in the workplace where the similar kind of behavior is. And I think the most egregious of all, and I think it's not a debatable subject, no woman or no man should suffer at the hands of another spouse or another dating partner. Right. I mean, isn't it incredible? It seems in Arizona, Roxanne, I mean, there's so much a preponderance of, what, domestic violence. It seems like it's out of control.
Right. And I think what happens when you work with or live with someone who's hurtful, it's normal for people with their own reactions, to start fearing that they've done something wrong or that they've caused it. The child will think, oh, I shouldn't have done something, or this kid wouldn't have bullied me, or the spouse might think, I should have done this different. But really, what people need to learn is that behavior is the responsibility of the person who does it. People who are chronically hurtful are very irresponsible.
Well said. Our special guest, Roxanne K. Livingston, her book, very apropos here as we begin the year, Chronically Hurtful People, How to Identify and Deal with the Difficult, Destructive, and Disconnected. Maybe you live in an environment like this and seek help. We're here to try to provide you some answers, some signs to spot sociopathic behavior. 1, sociopaths are charming. 2, sociopaths are more spontaneous and intense than other people. And 3, sociopaths are incapable of feeling shame, guilt, or remorse. And 4, sociopaths invent outrageous lies about their experience. And finally, 5, sociopaths seek to dominate others and, quote, win at all costs. But equally important, our special guest, Roxanne K. Livingston, her master's degree, helps write the book, Chronically Hurtful People, How to Identify and Deal with the Difficult, Destructive, and the Disconnected. Roxanne, welcome back. In the short time that we have, let's take examples of maybe where people are experiencing this kind of behavior. Let's say the workplace. I mean, nowadays the workplace is such a controlled environment, and nobody should suffer like that. I mean, I know that in my early days. It was horrible.
Well, you know, let me just say that, following your list there, people who are of the ilk that I'm talking about are expert at fooling people and expert at eliciting support.
Wow. So,
I mean, we elect these people. I'm not saying everyone in elected office follows this, but
there's a preponderance there.
Well, right. It may or may not be, but charming and charismatic and able to fool people and able to elicit support. So in an office situation, you might get someone who's wreaking havoc in people's lives, and other people think this is the most wonderful person on the planet because they're very good at manipulating environments like that. Mm-hmm. And the same thing in homes, too. You know, you get that sort of thing. But let me just say that when you're involved with someone who's, and you're doing your best to be responsible and caring and attentive and listening and understanding and forgiving, and the person continues to lie, manipulate, be aggressive, do hurtful things, it's important to stop trying to fix and change that other person, whether it's your boss, whether it's your child.
Say that again. Stop trying to
fix and change the other person. Because people always ask, oh, what can I do to get him to understand or get her to whatever? But the point is,
forget that.
The important thing is to focus on how you feel and to pay attention to your own projections and reactions so that you can stop being reactive and a part of the problem. And then realize that the other person is not interested in changing unless they get interested in changing. You know, I sometimes give the example that most everyone has familiarity with someone who's a drug abuser or an alcoholic. And while a person is using substances, they are a chronically hurtful person. They have all these characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when they're clean and sober, they are back to being responsible. By responsible, I mean taking into account other people, the context, and the self, all three things. But some people aren't. Some people aren't responsible even then. So you can't tell. So I'm just suggesting that when you have a chronic hurtful person, it doesn't mean that they're using drugs and alcohol. It means that they're not interested in changing their behavior. They do not see themselves as the problem. In fact, this show apparently talks about victim a lot.
Yes, it does.
Chronically hurtful people view themselves as a victim. Mm-hmm. Of no matter what's going on, no matter how aggressive, horrible, destructive, dangerous their behavior has been, they always find a way to blame other people for it or make excuses for it or come up mm-hmm. with all kinds of ways to redefine the problem so that they don't have to take responsibility.
Oh, it's fascinating, Roxanne, and I'm glad you're here. Let's go to the line number one again. We have Tony jumping in, and Tony, as I said, has been with us from the beginning of this radio show. Tony, good afternoon. You're on with Roxanne Livingston on Chronically Hurtful People. What say you? And Tony, do we have Tony on line one? Well, I guess we don't. Let's see here. Do we have Tony on line one? I guess not. Going one more time. Okay, we're trying to get our Mr. Producer to hit that button. And just bear with us here one moment, folks. Tony, you're on line Steve. Number one. Go ahead.
Thank you, Steve.
Sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
And thank you, Roxanne. You brought up a very important point here, and it's that moment of transition. It's that front door, be it at a workplace, a church, a house, wherever it is. Is that person coming in disgruntled, angry, wanting to cause problems? And that's really what most people are really not looking at. And I think that's what you should focus on, and that's the point.
Well, let me say thank you for that, Tony. Let me just say that there are people that can behave in a grumpy, cruel, unkind way because they've built up a lot of stress in their life. The difference between a person who occasionally does something irresponsible and hurtful and a person who does that chronically is that when the person when a person has been wounded by one of these people and expresses it, and the perpetrator cares and has a sense of responsibility and interconnectedness with other people, that person will change their behavior. But a chronically hurtful person doesn't change their behavior. They continue to do the same thing over and over and over again. So that's a difference. So just because someone comes in a door and is crabby doesn't mean that they're going to chronically hurt people.
That's what I'm trying to pinpoint, though, is that's where this starts. They are either, you know, like you said, beyond just being crabby, or they're just having a bad day
right.
and they need to settle down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Tony, thank you. You always have some insightful points and questions and comments. I just want to talk about this subject because I think, you know, it's so prevalent. I mean, we're talking about integrity the first hour, Roxanne, and now chronically hurtful people. I mean, it seems like in the workplace, but the home, let's transition more to the home. I mean, how many people do you think are out there, Roxanne? And the number is nobody knows, but it's probably a lot, where so many people are under this horrible mental torture. And domestic violence is not just physically punching someone. It is
right.
incorporating what? Even verbal, obviously
right.
verbal, and what
abuse.
Else? Describe that.
Well, verbal abuse. Yeah. There's all sorts of ways that people can really be hurtful. I think it's, fortunately, I don't know if it's, if domestic violence is becoming more prevalent now or we're just paying more attention to it now. But
well, it's interesting that you bring that up. I mean, some side of the equation would say, oh, it's off the charts. Just look
right.
at the statistics
right.
from what? Arizona's whatever right. the agency is. Forgive right. me for not thinking about it. But others might say, oh, no, because, you know, it's just something that's always existed. And now we have computers and we track it more.
You know, I really don't know. I had a lot of experience in Oregon, where I lived until 2 years ago, with with sexual abuse and physical abuse. And I had clients in their 70s and 80s who had been very badly abused when they were children, but that was at a time when this was not talked about at all. So we don't know if those things are really on the increase or if it is reporting.
No, it's very interesting. But stay with us. I mean, there's going to be so much more that we want to hear about this. But let's go to line number two again. We repeat callers with questions and comments. Dennis is back with us again. Dennis, good afternoon. You're on with Roxanne Livingston.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity here. Roxanne, your description of the behavior of this culture reminds me of what's going on in Maricopa County Superior Court Probate Division. It's exactly the problem that you have where people almost script verbatim their behavior in respect to how they're going to approach other people to be the victims of their demise. In other words, the people have already rehearsed in their mind how they're going to attack you and then put you in the position of being on the defensive. What do you do to protect yourself?
Well, it's a good concern, Dennis. I mean, this is something, Roxanne, that's in your area of expertise.
Well, let me just say, you know, it's very interesting. I don't know the situation that you're talking about in Maricopa County, but I will say that people who are of this sort that I'm describing, the chronically hurtful person, they do have in their mind what their attack or what their plan is going to be before they do it. They can say that it's a result of all these different stresses and problems, but they've already planned to lie or hit somebody or be aggressive or use their power. They've already planned it. The people I'm talking about, very often they do not have a core sense of themselves, so they're dependent on creating drama and excitement outside themselves. So very often these people will set up situations for people to be in an uproar or set up fights or set up confusion in agencies or stress in a family because they get stimulated by creating this kind of uproar.
Well, Dennis, a very interesting subject. I mean, it's a very, very deep subject, but you get the last word because we're going to run out of time here to the bottom of the hour.
Right, and that's my concern, is that these government agencies, it seems like they're appealing to their employees to become psychopaths, raining down on the honest citizen who's paying their salaries.
Well, Dennis, that's a whole other subject, but it's a very viable subject, and I appreciate your call here as we move to the bottom of the hour. But I wanted to get back, and we may want to keep you for an extra segment. We're going to change the lineup here a little bit, if you're good with that, Roxanne. But this is interesting. I mean, in the generic sense, just give us, we have a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour. What do you recommend people do? They're sitting out there, and there's so much of a silent majority, I think, in these subjects. So many people are afraid to, what, come out of the closet and admit the pain. They're confused. They regret going to work. I mean, husbands and wives have difficulty in marriages that hopefully it doesn't spill over to violence. What do you suggest people do if they're living in any of those situations, but more specifically the home? Let's talk about the home.
That's a good question. It's really important that people do learn to take care of themselves and stop putting all the energy in trying to fix or change someone that's not interested in being fixed or changed. So often people, parents, spouses, whatever, will burn themselves out trying to rescue or help or whatever somebody in their home that has no interest in being helped. Again, back in drugs and alcohol programs, they talk about hitting bottom. The person doesn't really change things till they hit bottom. Well, that's true for people that are chronically hurtful, that are not drug abusers. Also, they have to find their own pain and stop dumping their pain on other people.
Well, you know what I'm hoping? As a new governor comes in and a new administration, Doug Ducey, the inauguration is coming up next week. We're hoping that for the subject that you talk about, that they don't slash the need for mental health care in the
state.
Absolutely. This is important.
It's really, really important.
Stay with us, Roxanne, and here we go to the bottom of the hour here. We'll be changing the lineup here briefly as we continue here on A Call to Rights with me, Steve Cates, or producer Michael O'Connor.
And now here's your host, Steve Cates.
Sociopaths tend to be highly intelligent. Sociopaths are incapable of love. And we continue here. Sociopaths speak poetically. Sociopaths never apologize. And finally, sociopaths are delusional and literally believe what they say becomes truth. merely because they said it. As we continue in our last segment here, our first show of 2015, at 48 minutes after the hour, we thank you, the listener. We continue with Roxanne K. Livingston, her book, Chronically Hurtful People, How to Identify and Deal with the Difficult, Destructive, and Disconnected. Roxanne, great to have you here. Let's talk more about what's in the book, because we want to encourage people to actually go and get your book off of Amazon. And a simple email to contact Roxanne is simply books@RoxanneLivingston.com.
And my website is chronicallyhurtfulpeople.com.
Very nice. Also listed here on acalltorights.com. But there's so much in the book, so limited time. So talk to us if you were doing a seminar and people in the audience are saying, gee, you know, I suffer from some of this or being affected. I don't want to be a victim.
Well, you know, let me just say that some of the strategies that I talk about for people that work with these people, if you work in a public agency and you have to serve certain people, there's certain strategies you have to learn. The basic issue is how to get the attention of these people, how to hold them accountable and responsible. But we're not really talking about how to change people. It's how to use more of your energy for people who can really use your help and less, and focus less of your attention on people who are not interested. It's how to not get caught up in the games and manipulations of these people, because they will drive people. They'll just drain your resources.
Sure.
One of the things you just said when you were reading the list about sociopathy. Let me just say that when I talk about chronically hurtful people, I am talking about what we call in psychiatric circles people with personality disorders. And sociopaths would be on the extreme of that. But all of these people are self-centered, egocentric. They view the world as I, it. In other words, I'm the center of the world, and everything else is like an object that I can manipulate.
How sad.
It's really sad.
I mean, I see it. I could name people, but we're on the air, and I certainly won't do that. And I'm sure you could.
Yeah, but it's very sad. But it doesn't.
Better like that.
But in saying this, it doesn't mean that the solution is to write people off as bad people than good people, because I think everybody has a light in their core. Everybody is good at their core. The problem is some people are so disconnected from their authentic self and so far from it that that you can't relate to the self that they don't relate to. People that are this disconnected believe in their own beliefs. They can create their own fantasy of the world and then believe in it. So it's very difficult when you're on the receiving end of someone who's so self-centered.
I agree.
When I talk to people in agencies, I talk about a whole lot of strategies. I list some of these in the book, such as keeping the focus on what the client is doing and saying and not let them deflect it to other people and blame other people. I talk about learning how to be a credible authority for people, which is not based on years of experience or PhDs. It's learning to trust your own experience as having integrity and honesty and living a life that makes sense and that you do what you say and say what you mean. So establishing that credibility and how to stay out of fights, how to stay out of getting reactive.
Good point. Now, this is my next follow-up because we teach firearm training in the Second Amendment, and we're big proponents of this. I'm an instructor, and there's a lot of them out there. There's good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting, and you've told us, I think, in a short little clip that you also work with police agencies and talk about this problem and help. Let's now say the person who's the victim, which we don't like the word, of this aggression.
Yeah.
I'm hoping by having you here, and I'm pleased to have you, that if somebody is being treated horribly, we don't want to see them pick up a handgun to shoot somebody because of mental abuse.
Right.
If somebody's coming at me and trying to physically kill me, I'm going to stand my ground and do what I have to. So relate this, that maybe by this interview and a lot of the things that you do so wonderfully, we can all learn how do I deal with that level of anger that I'm experiencing because of that person so I don't go over the edge. What do we do?
You know, you mentioned earlier about hoping we have more mental health resources in the state.
Sure,
and
do.
I do too, because the people that actually come for help are the people that are being mistreated. You know, the people that are chronically hurtful don't call up a therapist and say, hey, I'm a jerk, help me. They don't do that. It's the people that live with them or work with them that say, oh my gosh, I'm just feeling so battered by my boss or my spouse or my kids. kid or whatever.
So this builds up and builds, up until the point
so
where
those are
break.
The people that will come in and say, I need help. So people need support and help. And one of the things they need help with is to learn how to not be reactive and how to be objective, how to what I call being a scientific or neutral observer.
That's tough.
Yeah, it's very tough.
I mean, how do you see, and we don't have time to go into it, but again, I'm going to transition a little here about the personal defense thing. I'm no fan of Gerald Loeffner, who shot Gabby Giffords, as we all know, down tragically a few years ago this, you know, January, as another anniversary. But the point is, mental health, I can agree with you on this. Let it be that this new Ducey administration, let us hope and pray that there's more monies available for people that really do need this. And I think, it's off the charts how many people probably need mental health.
Well, one of the problems with that is when you're talking about these people that are mentally ill that perpetrate violence, very often they're not going to voluntarily come in for help.
Right.
It's the people that they might be living with that might seek the help. So I don't think, just my own opinion, is just saying, we do definitely need more mental health dollars for a lot of reasons, but that in itself is not going to stop the people that are mentally ill that do gun violence, because very often it's only after the fact that someone notices.
No, and I may I'm not taking exception to anything you're saying, but I stand firm on this. You have your opinion. Let it not be that the federal government wants to take firearms from people who obviously have none of these issues and say that they may be unstable, because the slippery slope to me is if we fall under too much of the government, the magnifier, I don't want to be denied my right to own a firearm. So stay out of trouble, do things legally, be a good person. You can keep your firearm. But I'm saying with the state of Arizona and all states, it's pretty much a shame. I don't know the numbers. Maybe you do, Roxanne.
No, I don't.
If you look at the total amount of money that's given and spent for mental health, it seems like, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, it gets cut.
You're absolutely right. And it may well be that if we had more resources, people would be identified earlier, and that could be a big help. I'm all for that.
Let's go to line number two now. We have Kay in Tempe. Good afternoon, Kay. You're on with Roxanne Livingston. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you all. Thank you for this subject matter, so critical in just living in life. Thank you, Mr. Cates, for having this guest. Appreciate that. I'm hoping that she may obtain some radio time on her own show. We really need this kind of input, and my inquiry today is more or less twofold. It would be mother-daughter communication. I've seen such hurtful types of things. I would say we're talking sociopath. And also these people that are sociopaths are their neighbors, and they create problems for their other neighbors where they can't have their own pet, they can't have a plant, they're always looking to irritate and have people removed from living next to them. They're constant problem makers. Can you address that with some ideas of how one can deal?
Well, you know, some of the time, those situations I'm familiar with as well, and it's very, very difficult when you have neighbors, for instance, that simply will not behave responsibly, and they will wreak havoc in the whole neighborhood. And very often, it depends on the laws of where you are. Some places where I was from in Oregon, we had some laws that protected property owners, but it often took a really long, long time before any action could be taken. So it's really tough. So in any situation when you're dealing with that, sometimes the only thing you can do is get yourself out of the way, which is horrible to have to move out of your own home or whatever. But sometimes that is what has to happen, because there's not enough structure in place to deal with people that are just so irresponsible.
Yes, unfortunately, that's very true. And then the issue with between mother and daughter, I see this so often. I'm an advocate in the Christian area, have been for 50 years, and working with people and with pets and a lot of different issues. And so you run onto many, many things. I wondered, are you serving the community in a professional sense here in the Phoenix area?
I just moved here a couple years ago, and I still work by phone with people. I haven't set up an office here, but I'm exploring possibilities. I've practiced in Oregon for over 30 years and have been in the field for over 40 years. So I was taking a little sabbatical from direct client work, but I still do consultation and training.
Well, thank you for the book. We appreciate that. And hopefully maybe we'll hear more of you on the media here.
Thank you for your kind comments.
Thank you, Mr.
Cates. My pleasure. Happy New Year. And I wish we had more time, but we're back, just down to the top, up to the top of the hour here. Roxanne, thank you. This is an interesting topic. And if we've helped one person or if we've helped many, that's certainly the goal, to get the information out there. But I think we both agree without, you know, a longer discussion on it, that mental health issues here, not only in Arizona but around the nation, people need help. And, you know, again, as long as it doesn't deprive them, this is what I say, and I think the audience is cheering in the background, at least I think so. I don't know what you think on this, but I don't want the government being the end all to everything, that because I have a certain situation, they're going to deprive me of rights. I think there needs to be a much more fair and balanced way as we adjudicate this type of a process. But again, I think we agree that mental health, the funding and spending on helping people, should be there.
Absolutely.
And not be cut.
Yes, I agree with that.
It's an amazing story.
Absolutely.
Roxanne K. Livingston, how do people get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
They can look at my website is chronicallyhurtfulpeople.com, and there's information there, and you can send me, there's a link there to write questions, comments. You can order my book on any of the outlets, any of the Barnes & Noble, Amazon, CreateSpace, any of those. You can get the book.
You're a great guest. Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
And again, as I mentioned, folks, the most amazing people we meet in our lives, and the most what, Roxanne? Unusual of circumstances. We're both flying up to Denver and carrying a conversation on, and a good one at that. And I want to thank our producer, Michael O'Connor. Stay tuned, folks, for great stuff here in the year 2015.